Hello and welcome to Conduit Conversations, bringing you pioneers at the cutting edge of social change. I'm Paul Fonsale, co-founder of The Conduit, a home for people passionate about positive impact. In this series, we're exploring the role that love plays in inspiring us to face significant challenges, such as living with cancer and mental health struggles. Throughout this series, created in partnership with Ralph Lauren's Pink Pony and Champion Better Lives initiatives, we'll hear from inspirational speakers from across the globe as they share stories of love in all its guises, from personal relationships to community activism.
My guests today are award-winning Venezuelan photographer Ana Maria Arevalo-Gossan and her husband, Philip Quante. Ana met Philip in 2009 when he was spending a year as a German exchange student in Venezuela. A few years later, she moved to Hamburg to live with him, and they married in 2015. Only 1 year after they were married, Philip was diagnosed with testicular cancer. He was able to have the tumor removed through surgery, and life seemed to return to normal for a while. Then in 2017, Philip's cancer returned as a metastasis, and he had to go through strong chemotherapy. This time, Ana decided to pick up her camera and document her husband's experience. Intimate and moving, Ana's photos chronicle every stage of life with cancer, from shaving Philip's head to receiving treatment. Now cancer-free, Philip is passionate about increasing awareness and removing the taboo around testicular cancer for men of all ages. Welcome, Ana and Philip.
Hi. Thanks a lot.
Thank you for having us.
Thanks a lot for making this happen.
It's awesome to have you guys. So Ana, you created your photography project, The Meaning of Life, which you've described as an intimate story about love, strength, and how to live through hard times and cancer. And the project itself is a significant act of love. So what inspired you to start this photographic journey?
Photography has always been for me the motor to overcome doubt and to tell stories that I believe are crucial or important to the time that we are living. So when Philip was diagnosed, we were presented with this big challenge just by being also very young. And I felt very scared and I felt also very panicked. Like I didn't know how to move or what to do. And this object for me, the camera, has been always something that gives me courage, something that gives me strength to move. So I think this is why I took the camera in the first place. It was only for us also. It was something to be kept as a memory. I mean, nowadays, we don't see really a lot of things in the internet that represent the struggles of our life or the hardest parts of our life. But they're also part of our life, you know. Not everyone has a perfect life and everyone is faced with struggles and sad times. And for me, it was also important to document these hard times and these hard moments because they're part of our family memory. And, you know, the hardest moments are the ones that make us grow the most. And also, I didn't know if those were the last pictures I was taking of Philip. And it was very important for me that I document these times, no? It wasn't meant to be public. It was just for my own memory. It was just for the record of my own family and the record of my life, our life together. Then, after it was done and after a time went by when a healing process was done, then it took another meaning, right? It wasn't to be just published and out there.
So I understand the impulse to capture things and to chronicle things in photographs. And I guess I want to understand from you the instinct to capture the hard and the difficult moments, not just the high points and the celebrations. Did you have doubts about that? Did you feel vulnerable? Was that something that you found yourself questioning at the time that you were capturing the hard times?
The hardest moments for me and for Philip, there were moments where I needed to be present and I didn't pick the camera. Of course, I didn't took every moment of that period of time. I wanted to show him strong and I wanted to show him with, of course, with dignity and of course with vulnerability because we are vulnerable. But as I am taking a picture, when I am working, I need to be 100% sure of what I'm doing. And if I am not 100% sure of what I'm doing on the picture I'm taking, then I don't take the picture. So, of course, there were moments where I was scared of taking that picture, but I was sure that I needed to do it. And there were moments where I felt that it wasn't the proper moment to take the picture and I needed to be with him and I didn't take the picture.
So, Philip, did you have any doubts during this period about allowing Anna to photograph what must have been an incredibly vulnerable and challenging period of your life? What made you agree?
I mean, we have been together for 10 years, and since Anna studied photography, I mean, I've been annoyed, but I've been used always as a whatever model for all her projects. So especially in those vulnerable times, I think it was very difficult in the beginning. You have to imagine I lost my hair, my beard. Chemo does also cause swelling sometimes in your body, and you don't really look like before. So having pictures taken is not very comfortable in those times. And also I imagined that it would also stay just for us to not even maybe reach the family, right? And once, yeah, they went public in the aftermath, I was happy. Back then, I think it took a lot of conversation between Anna and myself. But Anna's Instagram account is called Anita Sin Filtro, which means Anna without a filter. And she has been used to photograph any kind of situations. And I remember that in the hospital, the nurses were quite shocked when they first saw Anna taking pictures of me. And then she even dared to ask the surgeon who replaced an implant they put to me whether she can take pictures of the surgery. And he, of course, declined. But that helped her to also get some of the stuff that I removed from my body to take pictures afterwards. So Anna is very persistent also with me and convinced me that this is something important for us. And I think without that work, we would never have been able to do all the actions we've done afterwards in awareness sessions.
So you strike me as people who share a lot of trust and faith in each other and indeed love. And so what did you learn about each other that was new during the diagnosis and the treatments and the recovery process?
Most of the time when you start a relationship, right, I think the happy phases are prevalent. And I think after the marriage, this was the first big shock. I remember the morning when I went to the doctor and I think she diagnosed me within 60 seconds that I had cancer fairly quickly. And I went back to Anna and I think it was a shock, but the way we handled it and how we went through, I think since the first second together, brought us much closer. And I think without her, it would have been impossible to go through and the support of her family, my family, of course. So I think we learned a lot about each other during the times. And she was there for me, which is something which in the end made our relationship even more profound than it was before.
Yes, what he said. It was the first hard experience for me facing a very, you know, big disease. And I agree with Philip. I mean, in those hard times, you never know how you're going to react. I mean, no reaction is a wrong reaction. We are humans, you know. But I think the fact that we were keeping to ourselves because we were we lived the situation among each other and our loved ones, and we were very strong together. We barely even discuss about anything, you know, like life gets so much simpler after you leave such an experience, right? You make it more simple. Like the complicated things of life, there is nothing, you know, too bad. Or so our relationship after that became something very easy and very powerful, I think.
So when you go back and look at the photographs with the benefit of distance and the benefit of healing and the benefit of recovery, what emotions does it provoke in you when it takes you back to those very hard moments?
I think it helps you to stay grounded and somehow with 2 feet on the earth. I mean, look, for 3 years I've been without cancer now, so that's very good. I have my checkups, which bring me back sometimes to think about it. But let's say from day to day, I work normal as before, I do sports as before. So there are no things that have changed and that make you often forget about what happened, right? So being taken back by those pictures that appear quite often, it helps you to also see the real priorities in life. And that makes you feel that the problems you face on a daily basis, maybe it's stress at work and other things, appear so small. And I think that's why it's important to see those pictures and get reminded of actually where we came from and what has happened to us.
Mm-hmm. I still cry every time I see them. So, but it's not something like I remember with sadness, but it's something that, you know, it fills me with, I don't know, a feeling of like, yes, we made it, like we're strong and, you know, we survived and, you know, I'm very grateful right now, but I still cry when I see them.
So you guys took this incredibly intimate moment, these photographs which are personal between you, photographs that make you cry when you revisit them years after, and then you organize an exhibition, you put them in front of the world, you open a dialogue, you raise funds. What convinced you to take this intimate step of taking something so personal and making it so public?
So I remember the day when Anna told me that she's going to publish, or she actually handed them in and they were interested in publishing, I think, our series. And I was quite shocked because for me, that was never the plan to expose those anywhere, right? But in the end, we agreed to that. And I remember when we organized the first Movember session, I was heading a football club back then. I was playing also soccer. And I remember that the feedback was very positive from the entire team, with more than 60 people were behind me. And we did a big campaign to raise first-time funds for Movember back then for the organization. We all were cutting our mustaches. And yeah, I think just the positive feedback that this raised helped me to continue to do so. And I also remember that especially my type of cancer is so rare that people, I mean, I didn't know about it before I had it. And it made all my friends and family actually go to a doctor at our age and get it checked, right? So I think it served the purpose that it was intended to, and that kept us going every year. Mm-hmm. But also, to be honest, Anna has been quite a big driver in this entire thing from the beginning. And I followed along, and now I'm happy we did, yeah.
For me, at the beginning, when Philip was doing chemotherapy, he shared this room with people, right? Once he was sharing a room with this young man, and he told us that he didn't tell anybody about it. He hasn't told his girlfriend even, or his family, and he was all alone. And I was like, man, why do you have to face this by yourself? Why is this such a taboo, you know? We are, as women, we are always telling each other, like, you have to take care of your breast cancer, you have to, you know, where they're doing campaigns in so long. And actually, testicular cancer is such a common disease. And I wish that cancer in general was more normalized, you know, was more talkable, would be more easy. And also talking about, like, man, we were a young couple, like, you cannot do everything by yourself. You need help. You need, you know, your ecosystem, your family and friends to be with you. And sometimes, you know, like people tend to, you know, forget about that and how important family and friends are in such a difficult time. So for me, it was so important that we talk about it and we kind of open up a dialogue, and not only funds, but awareness, to raise awareness. It was so important for me.
So Philip, tell us about this pervasive taboo around testicular cancer. Why does it exist? What can we as men do to change the perceptions around testicular cancer?
I think men in general, right, tend to not show feelings that much, try to hide weaknesses. To be honest, I have never seen a urologist before I was diagnosed, or before I actually found some pain and thought maybe it's worthwhile to go. And something that also my doctor told me back then, she said, like, I have seen people come in here that have two testicles in the size of a tennis ball, which you know, is so late that they have spread already, usually to lungs and maybe brain already. So I think it's once you feel something, it's time probably to go and see a doctor. And I think that is something which those awareness campaigns can help with. But yeah, what is causing those taboos? I think just it's probably cultural it's probably maybe also in the nature of men. I think that people have talked about prostate cancer, and this is something that people at a certain age do go to, but especially the target group of testicular cancer are young men. So I think the main people that get it are between 18 and 35, just in the middle, you know, being in the end of high school, college. So where we don't even think about cancer. And I think this is why it's important to raise awareness and show people that's something which is very good to get checked.
So you've said that it's important that men who get testicular cancer accept as much love and help as they can. Tell me about that.
I think every person is different, how you cope with such situation. But I'm sure that talking openly about your fears, about your feelings with someone is very helpful, right? And sometimes you're lucky. I think I myself judge myself very lucky that I have a family, a wife and friends that supported me well. And I'm also a person that is quite outgoing talking about this. But as I said, there was a friend of mine also, I became friends with him in hospital, that are others that cope differently with such diagnosis, right? And I believe that he was very fragile back then, and he had a traumatic experience with his mom. She died from cancer. That's why I think he was even more shocked in that situation and tried to not talk with anybody about it, right? And we had long sessions when we were laying in bed next to each other after the surgery, where we spent time talking, and I think I gave him a lot of courage to start open up to at least his girlfriend and then also to his family and accept help. Even if you don't have that many people that support you, I think you should take in the help, accept it, and try to share it. That will always give you strength, help you through those difficult times.
Can you guys tell me how you think campaigns like the Ralph Lauren Pink Pony campaign impacts the cancer community and provides assistance to those people who are coping with and battling to survive cancer?
I can only answer, of course, as the partner of somebody that survived and fought cancer. But for me, these kind of campaigns are help us stay together as a community. You know, cancer is something that really touches so many people, and the fact that you know that you're not alone and that there are partners and family who are, you know, living through this experience and they can see these kind of campaigns, it helps a lot.
Yeah. I think it's in the first place important to create, first of all, a sense of community, right? I don't think that if you have cancer, you feel directly that you're part of any community. I think Pink Pony helps to create such sense of belonging. And if you see other people showing strength, talking about love, how they get together with friends and get strength from this, it helps people to open up. I think if my friend, for example, back then would have seen this campaign, it probably would have helped him to also open up and feel somehow not so alone back then, right? I think that is one of the main purposes I see in this campaign.
So when I think about cancer, I often find my mind going to doctors and hospitals and medical treatments. And I don't often think about creativity and indeed about love. And you've spoken a lot about love, but I want to now turn to creativity. You've both used creativity as a way of coping with cancer. So tell us a bit about that.
Since we met, we've always done creative things together. We've done music together since the first day we met. And I think for me, creativity is the motor, also as photography, because they come together. I think it's the motor that keeps me active, that keeps my brain like happy and producing happy things. So for me, creativity was super important to live through this experience. So after he got the surgery from his first diagnosed, we recorded a song together. So I needed to go to the studio and record this song that I've been, you know, I wrote it back in 2014, but it was ready and I wanted to dedicate the song to him as a celebration of, you know, of his life and the love that we have. And he also plays, he's a musician as well, very talented. He plays bass and piano and guitar and everything. And that was very, very important.
Yeah, I think once, I mean, it depends on how hard you hit, right, by the illness. But for me, I was out of work suddenly from 100 to zero. And then it also gives you time to think about other things, right? Even though your highest priority is to get healthy, but then suddenly you can work on stuff. It may be creative or other things you can concentrate on. I think I also did a lot of sports, which took a large part of my life, but that is very difficult to do while you have chemotherapy, especially competitive football or anything. So I was, spending a lot of my time. One of my biggest passions is also cooking. I was trying to cook a new recipe every day. I went to the market to get some fresh air, spend time learning new things. And also, of course, making music with Anna. I had another band at the same time I was rehearsing with once, twice a week, that kept me going. I think all of that, you have suddenly time. If you take that as a chance to also, do things that you were missing to do due to daily stress and at work, there was times where I could concentrate back on creativity.
He was in a German punk band. I don't know if he wanted to say that, but that's what he was doing.
You two sound as though, in one way, when you cope with cancer, you show each other an enormous amount of love to each other. And then creativity, in some ways, is about doing things that you love. And the both of those things have a common denominator of love. And so the song you recorded after Philip's first diagnosis and surgery was called Crashing Into You. And we're going to listen to it now for a few moments. To keep it going for the whole show. Perhaps we should. I'm a bit emotional myself, to tell you the truth. So why did you call it Crashing Into You?
I am actually very, very bad with putting titles to things. But actually, the producer of this song asked me what was the title of the song. And actually, the song was called 1, 2, 3, 4. Before. And I was looking at the song, and I composed this song with a very, very good friend of us called Beniaro Garay, and we were looking at the song. We thought, it has to be crashing. It has to be crashing. And then we were like, okay, let's call it Crashing Into You, because, I mean, that's what we wanted the message to be, like it crashes your heart and your soul to the people that are listening to it. Like, they feel like they're, very moved. If they know the whole context of the story, of course.
I was very moved without even knowing the context. I'm even more moved knowing the context.
Thank you.
Philip,
yeah.
What's one thing that you would say to people who are living with cancer?
I would say you're not alone. Share openly your thoughts and fears with others, your closest friends and family. Accept help and love that is offered to you. It will get you through everything and will provide you with the strength that you need to fight.
And Anna, what's one thing you would tell people who are supporting and loving somebody who is living with cancer?
To listen to them. They're probably very, very scared and living through something very hard. So just listening to them and being there for them, it's something that it's going to bring them an incredible amount of love, I think. And I think that's the most important thing, just to be there. I mean, and don't be strange with the word cancer. You know, it touches so many people. And don't, you know, just be there. If you care about that person, just bring them something to eat or call them and offer them help. I think that would be my advice.
So we've spoken a lot about love for each other, but I suppose it's also important to support yourself and to love yourself and to increase your own sense of self-esteem and place in the world. So what's one thing that you would prioritize as an act of self-love?
For me, the truth is my biggest passion right now is surfing. So I live 20 minutes from the beach and I try to be in there as long as I can and as much as I can. And I think it's something that makes you disconnect. You're able to think about things and you can breathe ocean air. You're kind of free, right? You're getting one with nature. You can feel the waves moving you. And I'm kind of addicted and trying to do this as an act of self-love. And also I want to mention one of my best friends, Juan, who just died from cancer 2 months ago. And I took him a lot.
They used to go to the beach together all the time and they used to surf. So for him, I think it's also a way to connect with him and to unite with him. Yeah. And for me, it's strange because my work gives me so much pleasure and my work gives me so much satisfaction of this endless curiosity that I was born with, you know, for good or for bad. And I have to leave Philip for a long time sometimes, you know, like, I was stuck in Caracas because I was working there in a project. When the quarantine started, when this COVID thing started back in March, I was stuck in there because I was in a little town without internet and I didn't realize that they were closing the borders. So I had to stay there until May. So those kind of things are for me an act of self-love because they are a bit selfish, but at the same time, they are also the career that I chose and they're the path that I chose, which is important for me and fundamental for me. And yeah, I think that's for me.
So both of you kind of radiate so much love. I'm on the opposite end of a Zoom call, but I can kind of feel it through the screen. And I wanted to end by asking you to kind of share a final thought or a message about love with those people who are lucky enough to be listening.
Love is for me the most powerful feeling in the world, and it's what is going to win in the end. I mean, we're living in times where we're not sure, but we have to be sure, because if we tell each other this narrative of loving each other and being kind to each other and changing the narrative of we're going to end up in an apocalypse and the world is going to end and blah, 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 and the ecosystems are failing us, which they are. But if we change the narrative towards love and love, not just for each other, but also for the world and for nature, I think that in the end, love is going to win. Because it's the most powerful feeling.
Yeah, I would just say love is what matters. It's what makes you happy and whole as a person.
You two are blessed and wonderful, and it's been so lovely to speak to you. And I know that this conversation will be listened to across the world and serve as a source of inspiration to many. So thank you so, so much for joining me.
Thank you so much for having us.
Thank you very much.
It was a pleasure talking to you and sharing our feelings with you.
Thank you for listening to this episode of Conduit Conversations, created in partnership with Ralph Lauren. Feel free to subscribe. This podcast is available on all major podcast platforms. To learn more about the Pink Pony campaign, Ralph Lauren's global initiative in the fight against cancer, as well as their Champion Better Lives initiative, please check out the Ralph Lauren website. And for more information on the Conduits and our community of changemakers, please visit theconduit.com.